Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
The show that takes you home. The Homestretch with Sterling Holmes on ESPN Kansas City. 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, and the ESPN Kansas City Facebook page.
Welcome to the Homestretch, ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com, and Facebook Live, live in studio. Again, on a Friday, you don't know if it's going to rain. It keeps saying it's going to rain, and it keeps getting pushed back. And frankly, I don't like that. Because again, I'm golfing tomorrow, and it feels like it's going to keep getting pushed back, and it's going to rain when I'm golfing. And I don't play that. Not a fan. Just rain now if you're going to rain. If not, please hold off. I'm supposed to play softball tonight, too. Which, first off, yeah, I know. I'm a dumbass who decided to play softball in March. I get it. It's going to be cold. If it's cold and rainy, I am telling my team I am out. There is absolutely zero chance I play if it's cold and rainy. You think in my first softball appearance in like 6 or 7 months, I'm going to take one off the inside part of the bat, and my hands aren't going to be ringing for 43 minutes. Zero chance. Not doing that. Dylan is behind the glass. He will be gone for just a little bit as he's a detective right now. Someone apparently stole tickets, and he's trying to track him down. So, you know, my last name's Holmes, obviously first name Sterling. So Sterling Holmes is very much like Sherlock Holmes. And Dylan obviously has the alliteration with detective. So it's Detective Dylan right now trying to find the case of the missing tickets. So Dylan will be back whenever he is back. I want to touch on last night's game, March Madness. In March Madness, it sure was. Every game outside of UConn and Arkansas came down to the wire, but I obviously want to talk with the local team that's still left, and that is the Kansas State Wildcats. A game that went to overtime, a game that scored, that the score nearly went up to 200 total points, 98-93. Marquise Noel, who had his Patrick Mahomes performance where he was just dropping dimes left and right, manipulating the defense, even had a foot/ankle injury of his own, hobbled off, got it taped up, and came back. The parallels from Patrick Mahomes to Marquise Noel in this game, just phenomenal. Just a great game in general. Keontae Johnson ended up with 22 points. He was the leading scorer for the Kansas State Wildcats. But it wasn't just what Keontae Johnson did, being able to score. It was some of his defensive performances as well. Obviously, K-State's not a big team. But Keontae Johnson, him and Tomlin, when you have to go up against guys like Sissoko and some of these other bigger dudes, they can hold their own. I know they got out-rebounded by a lot against Kentucky. They found a way to win. In this game, team ends up with 31 rebounds, only lost the rebound margin by 6, still found a way to win. Tomlin, huge shout-out to him, 2 blocks. Tomlin has really impressed me as the season has gone on for Kansas State, especially defensively. He's good at blocking shots. He's not the biggest dude. Yes, he's tall, but he's not your typical big man. But he finds ways to get his nose in there. He gets rebounds, 7 boards, which led K-State, 3 assists, 2 blocks, 1 steal, and 11 points. A little bit of everything. He had a couple plays that were head-scratching. A couple plays that, if you're a Mizzou fan, kind of reminds you of Noah Carter. But overall, Tomlin's really improved. This K-State team was balanced outside of Noel. Noel really was the game changer, but you can't make great passes and have 19 assists unless dudes are hitting shots, unless you have good play calls going your way. Like the amount of back screens, the amount of just down screens from the free throw line, the amount of back screens on the baseline that led to Marquise Noel throwing either alley-oops or just dimes to people was staggering. Give Jerome Tang a lot of credit as well. An incredible coaching performance. Now, the play that's obviously going to stand out in the minds of many was Jerome Tang in overtime, tied up 92-92. Marquise Noel and Jerome Tang talking, almost looking like they are arguing. Next thing you know, half-court lob, Keontae Johnson, reverse oop. Now, even post-game, Jerome Tang was saying, hey, we're not going to let people know if this is real or fake. Don't let the upcoming teams know what we have in store for them. Real or fake, doesn't matter. One of the most badass things you will see in overtime, a reverse oop to go up to get and punch your ticket into the Elite Eight. I just have to keep giving this team credit. They're special, and not just special because they're going to the Elite Eight. They're special for what they've done with a coach in their first year. They're special for the amount of gelling that's gone on between Noel, Johnson, Desi Sills. Desi Sills, by the way, dude who was in Arkansas, then went to Arkansas State, was supposed to go to Auburn, fell through, and now here he is in K-State, and while he ended up fouling out, only played 19 minutes in this one, such a versatile piece. He is your prototypical six man. In this case, for K-State, he's been starting a lot, but he's a guy who, if Noel's out, if Keontae Johnson's out, if you need a third scorer, he can be your guy. If you need someone who, you get tired, if you're playing 45 minutes like Keontae Johnson did, if you're playing 43 minutes, which would have been 45 if not for the injury from Noel, you need someone to step up at times. You need a couple plays off. Desi Sills can be that guy. Desi Sills is a ball of energy. He's not scared of anything. I always say it makes me laugh. At times you're screaming, just take the floater. Take that 6-foot floater and instead of trying to yam on two dudes, but he's going to try and yam on two dudes. If he gets injured, he gets injured. But it's the intensity that he brings that really stands out. Not just offensively, but defensively as well. Masood was huge. 4 of 6 from three. 15 points. He really, really stepped up. He hit that logo three late. The type of shot where you're sitting, no, 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 yes. That's what he did. And Jerome Tang's fine with those shots. Talking with Shane back there, former producer over there on 810, he was basically saying, you'd rather have that shot than a turnover. And that's such a great point. A bad shot is better than a turnover. And speaking of turnovers, the thing that was supposed to plague K-State, five turnovers, only two from Noel, 19 assists, two turnovers on a bum ankle. You saw Noel mouthing. It was tough to hear over the roar of the crowd, but he kept saying, this is my city. This is my city. He's from New York, Madison Square Garden, from Manhattan to Manhattan. Noel runs it. No one is not prepared for the little guy, in the words of Calipari, anymore. Doesn't matter if you're ready or not, he will torch you. 20 points to go with it, and some amazing plays late, including 5 steals. Noel was the guy that sealed the game, not just offensively, but defensively. That final steal, took it down, didn't need to go for the layup, but did the reverse, finished it, count it. There's not much more you can say about Noel. He was the X factor. He might be the shortest dude on the court, but he was the best player on the court last night. Before we move on, I have to point out, Michigan State deserves a lot of credit as well. Anytime K-State went out on a run, anytime they got a lead, Michigan State had the answer. At times, I feel like K-State was dominating. They had the better play calls. K-State had the better performers. They had the two guys in Keontae Johnson and Noel who were consistently either creating shots for themselves or others. But Michigan State, anytime they fell down seven, they fell down six, what happened? Akins hits a three. Walker hits a three. Joey Hauser hits a three. Or Hogard would take it in. I was very impressed by the resilience of Michigan State, but on a day like last night, K-State was too much. The other games were just as impressive. You look at the Gonzaga-UCLA game. Gonzaga was down 13 at half. Drew Timmy ends up with 36 points, 13 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 blocks. But the thing that really stood out for Drew Timmy was those 2 missed free throws late. Gonzaga's up 9, a minute left in the game. You think it's over. I think it's over. Everyone in the crowd thinks it's over. Next thing you know, a couple missed free throws. Guy throws the ball out of bounds for no apparent reason. UCLA starts hitting. Couple and ones. Then Drew Timmy has a chance. Misses both. UCLA proceeds to go down. Drain a three to go up one. Got to give credit where credit's due. I thought it was a horrible shot. When Strother shot that ball, I go, no. No, no, no. What are you doing? Not only is there too much time on the clock, you're shooting it from well past the logo. Drano. Bang. He was 3 of 8 from 3, and if you watch this game, I watched the whole thing. Don't know if that's a shot you wanted him taking. He was 2 of 7 before then, and he had a couple that were beyond bricks. When I mean beyond bricks, I mean if you are a bricklayer, you'd be jealous of the bricks that he was throwing up there. You'd want to take those and throw them down. But it went in. Gonzaga moves to the Elite Eight. Mark Few, I always will say, give the guy a lot of credit. He probably could have gone anywhere. He could have had his pick of schools to go to. He's stuck at Gonzaga. He's built up a continuous program there. It's, what, 8 straight Sweet 16s for Gonzaga? Doesn't always have the best player. Sure, he's had some guys like Jalen Suggs, Adam Morrison, obviously Drew Timmy currently, but Chet Holmgren. But it's not like it's littered with a plethora of NBA guys, not a plethora of NBA talent. But he's built up a program and guys have bought in. Guys have bought in and they're continuously winning. While the big one has slipped through his fingertips multiple times, the consistency always stands out. The only game that was bad was UConn and Arkansas. I don't know how you look at this if you're a KU fan. If you're a Kansas fan, you're sitting here saying, good, Arkansas got waxed by 23 points. But you're also sitting here saying, that Arkansas team beat us? It's a confusing game, but this is what Arkansas's been all season long. High highs, low lows. Very inconsistent. The talent's obviously undeniable, but they can't seem to play together with any sort of consistency. UConn's peaking at the right time. UConn is a dangerous team as UConn faces Gonzaga. FAU, I want to touch on this one. FAU, Tennessee. If you've listened to this show, if you know who I am not a Tennessee guy. Just not. For a multitude of reasons. One, being a Mizzou fan. If you ever listen to Tennessee and those fan bases, those fans at that fan base, it's not fun. They will let you know that you are not the real SEC. Anytime you beat them, they will always have a comeback saying, well, this is a down year for Tennessee. What's it been, a down decade? I don't know. Tennessee fans are, they're going to tell you that. So I loved seeing them lose. By the way, I can't get into watching them play. I do not enjoy watching a first team to 60 wins the game type of game. Not for me. Tennessee puts up 55, FAU puts up 62, and FAU comes away with the victory. Davis with 15 led the scoring for both sides. Only two guys ended up in double figures for Tennessee. It was an ugly game, a brutal game, fairly boring game until the end. FAU went on a large run, and Tennessee did not have the answer. That's how Tennessee plays. Tennessee, give them credit, they're great defensively. There's no taking that away from them. They are phenomenal defensively. They know the rotations. They're swarming you, and they have length. Everyone on that team has length, from James to Meshack to Kumwa. They get after it. But it wasn't enough. When they get down, they don't have the scoring to come back. Things would probably be different would they have a healthy Zakai Ziegler. I would agree, but they don't. They didn't, and they fell. FAU moves to 34-3 on the season. First time ever for them in the Elite Eight, and what a story it is. Boyd with 12, Martin with 9, Greenlee with 6, and the big story was Golden, their center. Their center only had 3 points and 7 boards, but he was drawing fouls left and right. Were some a little on the flop side? You bet your ass they were. But he got it done. Plavik for Tennessee, he had a couple dirty plays this game. It seemed like Golden was getting under his skin. A couple of embellished moves from Golden. The next thing you know, he took a legit one that ended up in a flagrant one. And after that, he was basically done. Plavšić was basically done. You couldn't play him anymore. He only played 17 minutes, 3 fouls, and you had a roll with Adu. Now, I don't know what FAU is going to do in the Elite Eight, but it doesn't matter. The fact is they got there. And the fact is I won my bet. I had a bet with Ian McMillan, who I am going to talk with on Tuesday. I said Tennessee's not going to make the Elite Eight. His cutoff was the Elite Eight. I got lucky. FAU, I owe you a drink or two. Shout out to Pat Rose on Facebook Live. Bassmaster Classic, Knoxville, Tennessee is underway day one. Good for you, Pat. Get some big bass. I said bass, okay? Get some big bass. Panthers agreed a deal with wide receiver DJ Chark, switching over to the NFL. When Dillard comes back, we will hit on the rest of upcoming NCAA March Madness games. But with DJ Chark going to the Panthers, just another wide receiver off the list for the Kansas City Chiefs. And before anyone starts saying, what are the Chiefs doing? What are the Chiefs doing? How do they lose this? Jordan Foote put it into perspective. He says, going to reiterate that the Chiefs offseason has been one big game at wide receiver of, if they wanted to, they would. KC isn't silly or ignorant to their situation, and I think that's a very good point. If the Chiefs wanted DJ Chark, they could have gone out and brought in DJ Chark. They obviously did not value him the way that either the Panthers did, the way that some of our fans do here. The Chiefs know what they're doing at wide receiver. They're not just sitting here going, all right, we're just going to sit on our thumbs, and if someone wants to play for us for 1 year, $1 million, we'll do that deal. That's not the case here. They know the value of players. But they're being smart and selective. Do we know what the game plan is? No. But you better believe they have one. They know what the game plan is. And by the way, don't you think a team that's won 2 out of the past 5 Super Bowls deserves some credit here? Don't you think they deserve a little bit of slack from what was a retooling year last year and as Super Bowl champs? I think they know what they are doing. And by the way, the team that we see right now on March 24th, the team we see when OTAs and training camp and even game one of the preseason starts, to even before the trade deadline, might be vastly different. The Chiefs can still go out and trade for guys. just because you see a wide receiving core that might not behoove what you might think the Chiefs should do, doesn't mean the Chiefs don't know what they're doing. Maybe they want to see what Sky Moore has. Maybe they want to see what Kadarius Toney can do in a quote-unquote wide receiver one type of role. These are real possibilities. But DJ Chark signed a one-year deal. The Panthers are kind, I don't want to say going all in, but they're going to go all in with whatever they have and a rookie quarterback. That division is brutal. One of, if not the worst, top to bottom in the NFL. I've said 8 wins might win that division. So when you get DJ Chark, you have Adam Thielen. Obviously, you no longer have DJ Moore. But you're trying to give your rookie quarterback, whoever that might be, some weapons. The Panthers were evaluating quarterback Will Levis at Kentucky's Pro Day today. Don't know which way they go. Whether it's going to be Levis, CJ Stroud, Bryce Young. If it were me, I'd go with Bryce Young. I think that's the safer pick. And again, when Dylan comes back, we will talk more about some of these quote-unquote safe or slam dunk draft picks at quarterback. I don't think Levis will be the guy. That's a risky proposition. Same thing with Anthony Richardson. I know they were looking at Levis and Anthony Richardson over the past couple days, but I would just be shocked. But they added DJ Chark. They added Adam Thielen. And along with adding running back Miles Sanders and Hayden Hurst, they're really doing a nice job giving a rookie quarterback, whoever that might be, some help. Some Chiefs news. Chiefs re-sign tight end Blake Bell. Right now he's tight end 4 on the active roster. A lot of fans are sitting here saying, why do they re-sign Blake Bell? Why would they do this when they could try and get a rookie tight end? Does that spell the end of the Chiefs drafting a rookie tight end in what has been a historically deep draft class at tight end? What I will say, it's a one-year deal. It's not going to be a lot of money. If the Chiefs end up parting ways, they're able to do that. It won't be a cap killer. I will also say, with the Chiefs not bringing back fullback Michael Burton, with Michael Burton no longer here, I wonder if we see Blake Bell play a little fullback. Maybe I'm a little far-fetched here. Maybe I'm reading between the tea leaves too much. But Blake Bell is one of the best blocking tight ends in football. Blake Bell seems to be able to fit that role at fullback for the handful of plays that Chiefs run. Not only that, he obviously played quarterback sparingly in college, and he has a little bit in the NFL when it comes to QB sneaks. Now, we don't want him running that QB option ever again, but QB sneaks, fullback dives, should be in his repertoire. I would like to see Blake Bell play fullback on this team. He should open it up just a little bit more, and this way you don't have to take up a roster spot with a quote-unquote, not even quote-unquote, just a legitimate fullback. Now, the Chiefs probably won't carry 5 tight ends. What that means for Jody Fortson, who was brought back, what that means for Noah Gray, what that means for the Chiefs drafting a wide receiver remains to be seen. But I do think it's something to monitor. With no Burton on this team, what does that mean for Blake Bell in the occasional fullback position? I also think the Chiefs could use Noah Gray. I don't think Jody Fortson would suit him, at least his role, what we've seen from him as well. Noah Gray's also not as good of a blocker, at least currently, as Blake Bell. We know what Blake Bell means to this team. He is the quote-unquote best blocking tight end. But I will also point out, he was a healthy scratch those couple games in the playoffs. In this Super Bowl, when we all thought the Chiefs were going to have help, it wasn't him. It was Jerick McKinnon that gave help. He was a healthy scratch. The Chiefs' offensive line obviously took care of business. The Chiefs took care of business against the Philadelphia Eagles in the Super Bowl, but Blake Bell was not a part of that. It was surprising to me. It was shocking to me. So the fact that he was brought back again leads me to believe, I wonder if this is a case of they might use him a bit at fullback. Let's take a quick break. Come back, home stretch here, ESPN, Kansas City. Welcome back to the Home Stretch, ESPN Kansas City. Dylan's back. Detective Dylan is back, baby. Well, you know, my name's so close to Sherlock Holmes. You're Detective Dylan.
It's perfect.
But unlike Holmes and Watson, we did not get to the bottom of this. Who steals? Who comes to a radio station and steals? We're nice people. We give away free stuff a lot. Don't steal.
Someone will experience karma, so that's fine. Also, we know where the tickets are. So
we know where the seats are at. Dylan's going to come and hand you a strongly worded letter. Yeah, we're not mean. We're not going to kneecap you. But he'll write a straight... No, Dylan. Come on. I'm not doing that.
No.
I wouldn't be on your bad side, though.
No.
Any guy that can grow a beard that thick. Any guy who looks like he could cut down trees in Oregon. But not like the hipster kind, you know what I'm talking about? Not like the hipster who wears a flannel and who drinks the fancy coffees. You look like you could cut down a tree pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of my borderline of should I fight this person or not? Could they cut down a tree well? Do they look like they could be carrying an axe on them? You kind of fall in that category, Dylan. So for that reason, I would not fight you.
Thank you.
Yeah. That's a pretty fair cutoff line.
I'll let everyone think that.
Is that a pretty fair cutoff line, you think?
Yeah, it's kind of like a puffer fish. In that sense, I'll let people think what you've said is actually factual, and then like that will be my defense mechanism.
Yeah.
Like getting really big when a bear, which I don't trust. I mean, I would run, right? Naturally, you're going to run from a bear, but you're told to just get as big as possible.
So when you're running away from a bear, you don't have to be fast.
You just have to be faster than who you're with.
Faster than the person
you're
with. If you're alone, you're screwed, man. I'm not even going to front with you. If you are alone with a bear... good luck.
I think only one man's made it out, Leonardo DiCaprio. So
did he at least win an
Oscar
for that one?
Not good. Huh?
Did he at least win an Oscar for that one?
He did, yes.
Well, good for him.
Yeah, they finally caved and said he was good enough in movies to get an award.
I had a funny thing happen to me today, and I wonder if this has happened to you. You know when you're like with your parents and you're meeting people? And they're like, oh my gosh, I've not seen you since you were just a little kid. This person said, I've not seen you since you were in a stroller. So let that sink in, Dylan. Not seen me since I was in a stroller. I was like, oh, hey, that's funny. That's pretty neat. Yeah, me and my kid used to hang out with you. And we'd put the strollers together, you and my son. You guys would be in strollers together. I was like, oh, that's neat. He goes, I wonder if you remember him. My first thought was, how? If I'm in a stroller, I'm like 2 years old. How old do you stay in strollers for, Dylan? What age?
Oh, man.
Two?
My memory doesn't go back that far.
My point is,
right.
Your memory doesn't go back
probably
that far,
two.
Right? Yeah. Proceeded to show me a picture of them grown up. Now, riddle me this, Dylan. If I don't remember seeing said person when they were said child, how would I recognize them if they were grown up?
That's a good question. That didn't work for me when I'm five.
I mean, I'm joking because it's really not a big deal. But
I agree. It is a tough thing to respond from because...
I didn't know what to say.
I don't know what to say when they say that about me when I was 5 years old, let alone being two.
like, just, oh, hopefully I was fine when I was two.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't remember. I couldn't foresee 26 years from now this situation. I don't know. I just found it funny. I hope that doesn't happen to me, but I can guarantee when I get older, that will happen. I know it. I know myself. All right. I want to look at some quarterback situations. Dylan and I were talking about this before the show, and I want to bring this whole conversation up because with the Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud, Will Levis, Anthony Richardson, with the quarterback class that's currently available, there's not a slam dunk. And when we're looking back over the past few seasons, there hasn't necessarily been a slam dunk in every single draft class. Now, when you look back, it's obviously very easy to say, oh, well, just draft Patrick Mahomes. How did everyone miss that? Well, there's obviously a reason he went where he went. There's obviously a reason why he wasn't drafted 1-1. There were question marks. And we got to thinking, when was the last time there weren't question marks with a quarterback and they were clearly the 1-1 draft pick? When were they clearly 1-1 and not just 1-1 in the case of they were best available? Like, again, I think this year's draft class, if you draft C.J. Stroud, there are still a couple question marks. If you draft Bryce Young, there's still a couple question marks. Some of it's about height. For example, we brought up Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray was almost clear 1-1 based on the fact that he wanted to go to Arizona. Cliff Kingsbury was there. The talent was undeniable. But there were question marks about his height, right? That was something that stood out, so we couldn't use him in this situation. I think Joe Burrow was one we came up to that had basically zero question marks, where he was the clear 1-1 coming out of LSU, winning the college football playoffs. Joe Burrow was 1-1. So that one panned out. Another one was Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence was clear 1-1. We knew who he was. Every team was in on him. There were no question marks. But going back further, you almost have to get to Andrew Luck to see the 1-1s or the guy who there really aren't any question marks about. I mean, you look at some guys like Vince Young, Jamarcus Russell. You can be a highly touted player and still have question marks. You can be a highly touted quarterback, might be the consensus one, but if there's questions about you, I don't feel like we can use you in this situation here. So that's the way we went about this, and it's so difficult to draft a quarterback and how we almost say it's not luck. But a lot of luck goes in to hitting on a quarterback, to finding the right guy, to developing said player, to having him fit in your system. Obviously, you can take a look at Tom Brady, who was a sixth-round draft pick, and say, hey, worked out pretty well. Sure, but it also goes to show you how lucky the Patriots were. How lucky and rare it is to draft a quarterback who ends up developing into a franchise-altering player who wasn't the, quote-unquote, consensus number one. Which is why, if you're the Panthers, it's not just a simple decision of, well, just draft Bryce Young. For example, going back to what year is it, 2016 or 2017? I apologize off the top of my head. Carson Wentz. Was Carson Wentz the undeniable best quarterback? No. But he was drafted. He was one, right? Not two.
It was actually Goff 1.
Goff 1.
Wentz 2.
There we go. This even makes it better. Thank you for Goff 1. Was he the undeniable can't-miss prospect? Well, he won a Super Bowl, but I could say you missed. So 1-2 in 2016, Goff and Wentz. We're just trying to put in perspective how difficult it really is to get a franchise-changing quarterback, even if you have the number one overall draft pick in the NFL. 2017, the Mahomes draft. Miles Garrett went one, but Trubisky went number two, first quarterback taken. He also wasn't the consensus number one. What about Baker Mayfield? Let's go to 2018, the 2018 draft. 2018 draft was Baker Mayfield 1, who had a nice career. But now he's going to what? His fourth potential team? Sam Darnold, 3rd overall. Not ideal. Once you get to Josh Allen at 7, then you can start making the case. But my point is I'm trying to get these top three picks, or these top three, particularly number one overall quarterbacks, just to show that it's not as simple as just draft the first guy at 1, he'll be a stud. Kyler Murray, the next following season in 2019. Kyler Murray. That didn't work out. That's definitely not working out. 2020 was Joe Burrow, and then 21 was Trevor Lawrence. So the last two have had great success. Although I will say, if you see Zach Wilson 2nd overall in 2021, you still have some question marks. The point is, it's very difficult to find your franchise-altering quarterback, even if you have the first overall pick in the NFL draft. That's why the Panthers, I like what they're doing, getting DJ Chark, getting Adam Thielen, bringing in Miles Sanders and Hayden Hurst, trying to surround that quarterback with talent. 2015, Jameis Winston. Jameis Winston and 2nd overall, Marcus Mariota. 2014, 3rd overall, first quarterback taken, Blake Bortles. 2013, which was the wild one that the Chiefs needed a quarterback. They took Eric Fisher 1st overall. First quarterback taken in that draft was 16th overall, EJ Manuel. Don't feel like using this class. I don't think this is a very good representation. But again, I guess maybe it is showing how hard it is to find your franchise-altering quarterback, even if the number one overall draft pick. And then we finally get to 2012, which was Andrew Luck. So Dylan, what have we found? We go back 11 years. 10 years, if you want to count it, from 2012 until 2022. How many at 1-1 or first quarterback taken have we found franchise-altering quarterbacks?
Three.
So here's my point again. It's very difficult, and if you're the Panthers, is it just easy to say, yeah, whoever we draft is going to turn into a franchise-altering superstar quarterback? I don't think it is. Do you think, and again, based on this study that we just pulled up, do you think that at times we overvalue the first overall draft pick?
We got the greatest quarterback of all time at 10, so... And the Patriots got the previous one at
okay.
199.
I said Tom Brady's kind of the outlier because I do think...
Yeah, I guess that's true.
That would be more of the outlier than anything else. Josh Allen was 7, but I do think first round's the best example. And again...
Lamar 32, if you really want to go there. If you want to go to... We've already done all the other ones.
You can find a guy 1-1, as we've saw with Andrew Luck, Trevor Lawrence, and Joe Burrow, but that's 30%.
But doesn't it feel like if you're guessing at 1-1... You're worse off. What we're kind of proving with this list is if you're guessing at 1-1, it doesn't usually end up well. It's when it's
in the three quarterbacks. The three quarterbacks we listed were all the consensus 1-1s. Those were was Jared Goff? No. Was Kyler Murray? I don't think because of his height there was concerns. And there's concerns about every single quarterback coming out of this draft. So this little study we've shown, unless you have a consensus number one overall quarterback, I personally believe trading up, you're probably overvaluing it.
Yeah.
Probably overvaluing 1-1.
Or you get extremely lucky and people miss on someone that is, like the guys we kind of started rattling off, like Josh Allen, Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Tom Brady.
So going through this right here, let's just say, for example, because I want to go through why I think 1-1 can potentially be a little, I don't want to say, I think overrated because or overvalued.
Here's the other question I have for you. After Andrew Luck, when's the next one? Is it Peyton?
Oh, I'll have to go back. So we have Trayvon Walker this year. I'll go back. I like your question better. I will go back to.
Think about it, because before Andrew Luck, who else was there besides Brady, Roethlisberger, and was it Eli?
So we currently have 12. Or 11 seasons, we have three.
Can't miss. Actually have shown to be.
And by the way, 2nd, obviously, in that draft was Robert Griffin III. Trent Richardson was third overall. Wow, you look at that draft. There was a lot of misses early on.
Well, and it stinks to say that Griffin was a miss because of how poorly
it was injuries.
Handled. Yeah.
Cam Newton was 2011. I would count Cam Newton. Cam Newton
yep.
won a Super Bowl. So you have Cam Newton and Andrew Luck in back-to-back years. So now you have 4-12, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because he was a consistent.
So you're saying go to a Super Bowl is enough?
Yeah, I think going to one is enough.
I think that's fair.
Sam Bradford the year before, I wouldn't count that. I wouldn't say Sam Bradford. He had a good career, but would you say Sam Bradford was a franchise-altering player when Ndamukong Suh, Gerald McCoy, Trent Williams, Eric Berry, Russ LeCun, Joe Hayden, all drafted directly following him, who were, I think, franchise-altering players at certain positions? 09, Matthew Stafford. What do you think? Stafford has won a Super Bowl, but it wasn't with the team that drafted him.
But the team that drafted him was Detroit.
And were horrible throughout his
that's
entire
true. So
tenure.
The Patriots were horrible, too, before Tom. So
can you,
that's
can
not
you
an
use
excuse.
That?
No, I don't think that's an excuse.
I'll use
opinion.
Stafford. I think Stafford's a good because Stafford.
I agree. I don't think it's an excuse, though, for your team to be so poor because the 49ers were terrible for Joe Montana. Now, I guess you could say that Stafford never had a great coach,
sure.
which matters. So
Jamarcus Russell.
We'll give him a pass.
Jamarcus Russell was 07.
Well, he's definitely a miss.
First quarterback taken was Vince Young in 06.
Miss.
Alex Smith in 05.
I don't,
you'd probably say miss, at least based on the team he was on, too. Well, and Rodgers, and the fact that, yeah, he wasn't the best quarterback in his draft class. Because
exactly.
if you're drafting 1-1, you have to be franchise-altering the best in your draft class.
And make a Super Bowl to be on this list of what we're doing. Now, Trevor Lawrence hasn't done that yet, but he is the—
We can tell he's a quote-unquote
right.
franchise-altering quarterback.
When you come back from 27 points in a playoff game after throwing four picks in the first quarter, basically, I think you got it.
So what we've just gone through shows how hard it is to draft a franchise-altering quarterback at 1-1.
When was Eli? 04?
He was, I just closed it out.
You're good. I think it was 04 because that was when Rivers and Roethlisberger.
Again, I ask before we go to break, do you think at times we overvalue 1-1? Because you're giving up a lot of draft capital just to move up to that spot to draft an unknown. If you were drafting Andrew Luck, Trevor Lawrence, or again, I think Cam Newton was thrown into the, was Cam Newton a quote-unquote can't-miss prospect? I think Cam Newton falls into that can't-miss prospect territory. Was Jamarcus Russell? I think there was question marks about Jamarcus Russell. So unless you were drafting a can't-miss quote-unquote prospect at 1-1, I think you shouldn't move up to 1-1. You almost have to let the third guy fall to you. You might be better off keeping your draft capital and seeing what Will Levis can do instead of trying to see what Bryce Young can do. Because Bryce Young has question marks, and if we just went through what we went through, I don't see the reason to do this. Maybe we have the ability for 2020. We 2020, we can look back, right? We have the revisionist history of this.
So you're saying the Panthers made a bad decision giving up all that just to be 1-1?
Correct.
I'm honestly in the same
yes.
boat after going through all this with you because you weren't, that pick would never have been available if there was a Joe Burrow, a Trevor Lawrence,
correct.
A Peyton Manning, anything
correct.
There.
Even
Bears
if you had Justin
said,
Fields, yeah.
Definitely if you had Justin Fields. I love Justin Fields, but he's not exactly
I can't Alex miss
Smith.
Prospect.
He's not exactly Alex Smith or anything that you wouldn't have. Like, that's the level of if you're willing to trade Alex Smith after an MVP season for mm-hmm. what we know now as
yeah.
the greatest quarterback one of all time.
And I will also say Alex Smith was probably
like anyone
also
below
in the can't-miss prospect territory.
Right.
I think he was. He might have been
yeah.
included in that can't-miss prospect
at the time.
At the
yes.
time.
Yeah. But, like, if that's like kind of the threshold of, like, we're willing to move on from this to get X, like, you would be willing to move on from Justin Fields for Andrew Luck, Joe Burrow,
Trevor Lawrence,
because
without a question,
Trevor Lawrence was second before Justin Fields.
Yeah.
So, you're totally right. Like, and the fact that they spent all that, everyone said that day the Bears probably won that deal.
Did
a good job.
And again, I'm not saying the Panthers shouldn't draft a quarterback, but I'm saying trading all that to go to 1-1 instead of sticking at maybe where you can draft
the third quarterback.
Yeah.
Because, like, yeah. You literally, it's not Andrew Luck. It wouldn't have been available if it was a caliber quarterback that way.
Yeah.
So they actually, when they started entertaining your offers, that's when you should have got out. But
and
it's
again,
a new owner.
We're not saying that Bryce Young or C.J. Stroud or whoever they draft at 1-1 is not going to turn into a superstar quarterback. But we're saying the odds of that are so slim. I wouldn't have done it, and I think you're overvaluing 1-1.
It's three out of the four, five, what would we end up at?
You're basically looking at maybe 20% chance.
Exactly.
You're basically looking at a 20-25% chance, and you probably have the same chance if you're stuck at four, if you're
right.
stuck at five overall draft pick with keeping a lot of your draft capital.
Yeah.
It was a fun exercise. This all started from Dylan and me before we had the robber come in. Before Detective Dylan came into his own right, we were talking before the show, and then he became Detective Dylan Watson. If you were a detective, what's your name? I guess you haven't really found it yet, so I don't know if you're a detective. You're more of like a failed detective.
No, I'm more like a deputy.
Deputy Dylan?
There you go.
You like the alliteration, baby.
Hey, it works.
We're going to take a quick break, come back, home stretch here, ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back to the home stretch, ESPN Kansas City. All right, Dylan. Let's look at tonight's slate of games. College basketball, I mean. You know what I mean, right? Oh, by the way, did you end up betting last night on college basketball?
I did not have time to place any bets, although I almost texted you when FAU made that.
See?
Amazing comeback, because I know that you were basically the Undertaker gif. In the coffin.
Just waiting.
Yep.
Popping out. Basically, we went 4-0 yesterday.
Oh, wow. We did.
UConn.
I had UCLA, I think.
I had Gonzaga. Oh, yeah, you did have UCLA.
Yep.
If you listen to me.
I went
4-0, baby.
I went with my bracket and my heart. Had to.
Could have won you some money last night. If you listen to us, we might win you money.
At worst,
we might lose you some money.
At worst, you would have gone 3-1.
Yeah, but if you parlay it, then you're just even more mad.
Then you're 0-1.
Then you're 0-1.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we did good yesterday. Let's see if we do well tonight. San Diego State against Alabama. This is the matchup I have in all my brackets. I thought Bama's been the best team all year long. Bama, I think, is the best team currently left in the March Madness. And I think Alabama is maybe the most athletic team left as well. San Diego State, they have played well. The only team in the Mountain West who's done anything in the past, 10 years? Since Kawhi Leonard's been at San Diego State. I like Alabama tonight. I don't think I would take the 7 points. Alabama's 7-point favorites. But I like Bama in this one. I think Bama takes care of business and beats San Diego State. What do you think?
I don't know. I want to take San Diego State to cover.
That's fine.
But I really do think Bama wins this in the end. So I'm going to go with Bama, but I do think it's close, very close.
Yeah, I like Bama.
San Diego State brings you down into the mud.
They do, but Bama's the
so good.
Bama's
yeah.
so good, man. Yeah.
That's the only reason. That's why I said all this is because you can stop Brandon Miller, you know.
Yeah.
And
you can try.
You can try. But when you've stopped them and you went 0-for, they still won.
Yeah, they're just such a talented team, man. After watching them, they can defend very well. They can score from anywhere. They run. They're great in transition. I like Bama. All right, Miami. Somewhat of a surprise, right? Miami, they've done good in, back-to-back March Madness tournaments. Good for them. Nigel Pack, also former K-State player. They are facing Houston. I don't think Houston has what it takes to – I mean, I don't think Miami has what it takes to get past Houston. I think Houston is clearly the better team. Wong's played very well for Miami. Miami shot the ball very well. They love to run. They love to jack up shots. But Houston's just a different animal, man. Houston and Bama, I think there's a reason why you saw them as one seed. I think Candace was, but no, Bill Self was a huge loss for them. But I have both Bama and Houston winning tonight. What about you?
I'm going to go with Houston as well.
I know, we're not
kind of chalking it up here. But
I know. Hey, I went FAU yesterday, so I'll go out on a limb.
It might just be a chalk night.
All right, Princeton, Creighton, the 15 seed, winning two games already against Creighton, the team I've bet with almost all year long. When I've actually bet on college basketball, I've gone with Creighton. I'm going with Creighton tonight. I have Creighton in my Elite Eight and what my money bracket. I'm telling you what, my Creighton pick's looking pretty good. Got to roll with the bracket. What do you have?
Give me Princeton. Keep the dream alive.
You serious?
I'm just going to go. Why not? I'm having fun.
I love it. Xavier, Texas. I have Xavier. Here's your one slight upset. I have Xavier tonight. I think Xavier gets it done.
I'm going to go against you with Texas because I like Texas, and we got to keep the Big 12 as strong as possible.
Xavier averages 81.2 points per game. They can score with the best of them. I think they score enough to get past Texas. This was the Homestretch here, ESPN Kansas City, back live into you on Monday. Have a fun, safe weekend. Until Monday, we are out.